Welcome back to the Treatment Room Podcast. I'm your host, Tessa Zolli, licensed esthetician, acne specialist, and NASM certified health coach. Please excuse my little two-week absence. I have just been, going through some things. I've been traveling, trying to juggle all the work things. Sometimes life just really kind of catches up with you, and it's been difficult to get an episode out, even just traveling these past few weeks. This is something I have talked about before, but it's one of the areas I really struggle with when it comes to being both a content creator and a business owner. And I think doing both of those things pretty full on, they are jobs where I'd say it's difficult to completely unplug and just do nothing. And I definitely feel this pressure. I think as somebody who really values wellness, I know that breaks are so important. I know that vacations are good. For me, it's just something I always struggle with because I know my clients have certain needs. It's difficult to just go off the grid. I do like to be reachable within business hours. And when it comes to, social media, I enjoy sharing. I love creating content. I like to show up in my day-to-day and kind of take people with me, through my day and through my business and share whatever I can to help people. And it's become really second nature to me. But with that comes a little bit of phone addiction, and it's still work even though it is fun. So that's something that I'm pretty much always doing even when I'm on vacation. And then when it comes to having a retail product line, that's also something I struggle with, putting on the back burner because I know people want their products. I really pride myself on shipping quite quickly. Generally, even the day somebody places an order, possibly the next day, if two days go by where I haven't shipped product, that's pretty unusual for me. And I also just don't love the feeling of having a lot to catch up on. I think I also have kind of the self-awareness to know that's more overwhelming to me than doing a little bit every day. So I am guilty of, working on vacation. That's something that's, I think, a work in progress, and maybe a lot of people out there listening struggle with as well. But when it came to the podcast, funny story, I actually even brought my mic with me in my car because I went on a road trip to Southern California to see my mom. That was one of my little summer trips. And I had every intention of recording the pod, but just didn't happen amongst other things. And that's okay. I think breaks are so normal. It's actually not normal to be on a content hamster wheel. Somebody asked me the other day, they were saying, I feel really unmotivated and uninspired right now. How do I get motivated? I don't like that. I'm not thinking of ideas. I'm not feeling creative. And my response was really just like, it's okay. It's not normal to feel inspired 100% of the time. The best artists, the best songwriters probably would tell you most of the time when they go to the studio, they don't have inspiration or ideas. A lot of times those things actually come from really challenging moments or going new places and seeing new things, experiencing new things. And that's just not going to always be our norm. A lot of life can be, status quo. And I think sometimes even it can be a sign of burnout and a sign that you need to do a little bit less and you don't have to stress about producing constantly. And I think for myself, since I've been on social media for, I think, 5-6 years now, of course, there's going to be some weeks where I'm not putting as much content out. Maybe I even go through a several month period where I'm not growing very much. I haven't had a viral video or anything really pop off, and that's okay. We are in this for the long game. So if you're kind of experiencing this, you know, feeling of guilt and not feeling motivated, it's totally okay. And I'm with you. I experience that all of the time. I would rather have a little period where I feel uninspired, but then come back stronger, come back with fresh ideas, and just really be able to, whatever I put out there and whatever I bring to the table, make sure it's something that I feel good about. And speaking of, I feel really good about today's episode. I think it will be helpful. I do know a lot of people can struggle with their skin in the summertime. It can just present a lot more challenges with heat, bacteria, inflammation, so on and so forth. So let's get into my summer skin tips for healthy skin all through this hotter season. Okay, this first one I've been wanting to talk about for a little while. I think it's really important, and it's something I just don't think is talked about enough, and that is sweating and the skin. There is nuance to this. Sweating is a very healthy thing for us. However, on the other side of the coin, sweat can definitely present some challenges for the skin. Sweating is healthy for releasing buildup and impurities. It even helps to cool our skin down. It helps us to regulate our temperature. It can even help us to maintain good moisture levels in our skin. But the challenges of sweating in the skin is that it can create a breeding ground for bacteria. It can also clog the pores, and it can even irritate them. So the reason this happens, I just don't think we think about this, but I think when we sweat, a lot of people might assume you're kind of just losing water. We are losing primarily water through sweat, but we are also losing salt, sugar, and even ammonia and urea. These are substances that can irritate the follicle, and they can clog the follicle as well. And some skin issues I see exacerbated by sweat are definitely acne. Acne is probably the most common one. Sweat can also exacerbate rosacea. Of course, if the skin is hot and there's excess bacteria on the skin, that is not ideal for rosacea. The other condition I am seeing more and more of is fungal acne. Fungal acne is really exacerbated by bacteria and heat. It can occur in situations where it's really hot or we're sweating often, maybe hot, humid climates or places like the gym, saunas, hot yoga classes, or anywhere where you are sharing gym equipment with the public. And then lastly, I wanted to mention prickly heat, which is, you know, not something everybody encounters, but I have had a handful of clients experience it. Prickly heat is basically a rash that happens when we sweat, and the sweat cools down in the follicle and irritates it. And it's really uncomfortable. And it's something we want to try to take proactive measures against. And that's really the key when it comes to sweating. Remember, it is good for us, but, you know, consider it in moderation and consider the appropriate steps for managing sweat and bacteria. So my tips for this, for one, if you are somebody whose chief priority in life right now is managing and treating acne, one piece of advice I might share with you, and this is something I talk about in my acne bootcamp, is possibly considering adjusting your types of workouts or the environments in which you work out. If you are going through acne bootcamp, the types of exercise that I would say are not ideal would be things like a hot yoga class. I've been in some of these hot yoga classes, you guys, and they're really enjoyable. I like to do them from time to time, but that air is very, very hot and very, very dry. So if you are using active products on the skin every single day, such as benzoyl peroxide or retinol, or you're just in the process of acclimating to these types of, you know, more active, potentially aggressive ingredients, your skin can go through an adjustment period. And if you are just blasting the skin with dry heat and sweating a ton, it could get a little irritating. So hot yoga, I'd say, is one that's best in moderation, and possibly think of it as a reward for after acne boot camp. Once you get clear, you'd still want to do it in moderation, but I would say it just doesn't always mesh well with a lot of active ingredients and exfoliation. And then the second type of exercise that I would say is not super ideal for an acne sufferer are high intensity cardio, things like running a marathon where you're going to be sweating and have bacteria on the skin for hours and hours, especially if you're running outdoors, you have the sun and heat on you in combination with the sweat and bacteria. That is something that, you know, of course, we can still treat the skin. We can likely make progress, but we don't want to leave bacteria on the skin for too long because it does just tend to be fuel to the acne flame. So I think you can and you should work out no matter what stage of your skin clearing journey you are at. But I would suggest looking for more low impact type of activities, activities that aren't such high cardiovascular and aerobic sweating type of activities. If you really love cardio, you could consider swimming in a saltwater pool. That way you kind of stay cool and make sure your face is protected with a hat, that kind of thing. I also love walking, Pilates. You could do normal yoga, which is actually very helpful for regulating stress levels. And then I love lifting weights. I'm a big weights girl. I would love every female listening to give weightlifting a try in some capacity, possibly with, you know, professional supervision if you've never touched a weight before. But weightlifting is one of the most effective exercises for your body's metabolism, for helping you to gain lean muscle mass, which will essentially just make your body more and more efficient. With acne, the people who are doing a lot of high intensity cardio, they can really be spiking their cortisol because your body cannot distinguish the difference between running from a bear and just running on the treadmill or running marathons, running on asphalt for hours and hours and hours. It can be really, really hard on the body. And again, I think you could enjoy it in moderation, but I would stick to more low intensity, low sweat type of activities if it were me. The next piece of advice I would share with this is being proactive about washing your face before and after workouts. This is the question I get every single consultation with a client who likes to work out and go to the gym. So the question I always get is, for one, am I overdoing it by cleansing before and after the workout and then again later in the day? I think for some reason there is a lot of fear around this. And I think, you know, back in the day when we didn't have well-formulated facial cleansers, cleansers that weren't necessarily pH balanced or made with beneficial ingredients that could actually improve the skin through cleansing, this was for sure more of a concern. If your skin is feeling tight, dry, and stripped after cleansing, that's not a great thing. But you certainly can and should cleanse your face before and after the workout. This will help reduce the impurities on your skin before you exercise and after. And the before is actually very important. I think some people can think, okay, I was just sleeping, my skin is relatively clean. If I just wake up, go to the gym, and then do my skincare after. And then the other question that comes with this is, do I need to do my full routine before and after the gym? And I would say no. Before you go to the gym, keep it super simple, straightforward, and we want to stick to light layers. I was mentioning how sweat actually can clog the pores because we are releasing some oil and some other substances. So to minimize the clogging, we want to ensure you are using skincare that is supportive for acne. It's not acnegenic. We shouldn't be working out with really thick, heavy moisturizers, oils, a lot of active serums, heavy makeup, foundation, blush, bronzer. Nothing against anyone who wants to wear makeup to the gym. I totally get it. I would say if you could choose maybe like a sunscreen makeup or a professional makeup skincare brand like Color Science, I think that is a really good alternative. And that way your skin is actually protected through the workout. You can still get any kind of confidence you feel from wearing makeup, but it's not going to add to congestion. And then let's talk a little bit about post-gym aftercare. I would say the less time you can leave sweat lingering on your skin, the better. And this is, again, really important for not only acne, but also rosacea. Anybody who struggles with fungal acne or who is prone to a prickly heat rash. I think we, you know, can be a little bit resistant to this because it takes more planning. It takes bringing your products to the gym. I get it. It can be a little bit awkward cleansing your skin in a public gym bathroom, but I would say the sooner you can get more comfortable with it, the better for your skin. We want to, you know, even consider your skin has had sweat and bacteria on it through the workout. That could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour, could be 2 hours. I wouldn't add much more time to that by waiting to drive home, you know, get home, get to your sink or shower and do the whole thing. If you could bring your products to the gym, that's one of my best pieces of advice. And I really do see a difference with clients who do this. If I didn't, I would love to say it's not a big deal. Just, you know, do it when you can get to it. But it really does make a big difference. And I was talking about this with my dermatologist the other day who sees a lot of fungal acne. And she says one of the biggest causes is people who love to work out, whether it's a gym goer or somebody who works out outdoors. It's really, really important to get that bacteria off of your skin ASAP after you exercise. My next note on this topic of sweat and bacteria is ensuring you have the right cleansers to support you through the summer, especially if you are noticing you sweat or you work out, maybe you live somewhere very hot and humid. So, in my opinion, 3 cleansers will take you very far. And to me, these are kind of core staples. Of course, if you needed to edit it down, if you wanted to be super minimalist or you were on a really strict budget, you could just stick to one. But personally, I like to have 3 cleansers. I like to have a creamy cleanser that helps me to remove makeup. I like to have a gentle gel cleanser that does not have any acids or exfoliation. So for these 2, of course, I gravitate towards my double cleansing set, which has Undo, the cream cleanser, and Low Foam, the gentle gel cleanser. These cleansers have a pH that is similar to our skin's own pH. They don't contain anything exfoliating, and after you use them, your skin will not feel like it has any residue on it. It won't feel like it's tight, dry, or stripped. If you needed to use either of these cleansers, you know, 3 or even 4 times a day. Ideally, 3 is plenty, but if you needed to use them multiple times a day, it would be better to use them than to just allow sweat to build up on the skin. So I recommend, again, a gentle creamy cleanse, a gentle gel cleanse, and then the 3rd cleanser I think everyone should have is some sort of treatment cleanser. This could be a glycolic cleanser for somebody who's a little bit more prone to dryness or rosacea. It could be a salicylic cleanser for somebody who is prone to acne or oil. It could be a benzoyl peroxide cleanser for either rosacea or acne. The key is just finding the right one that your skin responds well to. And something else to remember with any of these cleansers, they could also be your body wash. Sometimes I'll use a creamy cleanser for my body wash. If I feel more dry, I'll use a gel cleanser for this as well. And I'll use a more active exfoliated cleanser on my body maybe every other day, since I do sweat frequently. I take my dog on walks outside. When it's hot, I work out, so I'll use something like a benzoyl peroxide cleanser under my armpits to target odor, and I'll also apply it to my back and my chest to help combat breakouts. I think having those three will take you far. They'll probably last a long, long time. And the other thing to remember with high quality professional cleansers, such as my Free Skin by Tessa cleansers, these are very concentrated formulas. So you probably need less than you are used to if you're used to products from the drugstore where you kind of need a lot to remove your makeup. Honestly, with these cleansers, 1 to 2 pumps is perfect. You can add water to get low foam more foamy, for example, or to make undue spread more throughout your face. You don't always need to add more pumps of product. Sometimes you can just add more water because, again, these are very concentrated formulas. So I do think you get your money's worth. You end up using less product and getting a better result. So it's not like you need to try every cleanser in the drugstore to find one that works for you. You can just invest in the right products instead. And somewhat on this note, but also transitioning into talking about active ingredients in the summer, I think for the most part, especially acneic clients or just those who are prone to acne, will find that they can tolerate using their active products, be it an exfoliating wash like a benzoyl peroxide wash or a BPO serum, or a retinol product, a salicylic glycolic serum, whatever it may be. I think because we are producing more oil, possibly sweating more, people tend to tolerate these types of products with more frequency versus the winter time when the skin can feel a little bit more dry. It's not producing as much oil. So to keep up with your skin's unique threshold for oil, bacteria, dead skin cell buildup, it's very possible you might need to be using these type of active treatment cleansers, serums, generally just acne products or exfoliation. You may need to use them with more frequency. There's something I've been talking about recently called, I call it skintuition, which is really the art of learning to listen to your skin, to know its cues, to kind of anticipate its patterns and what it needs before disaster erupts or before you're in some sort of situation where all of a sudden your skin is really flaring, it's breaking out. If you can kind of assess your skin on a daily basis when you are touching your skin in the morning and at night and doing your skin routine, this is something that I do every single day. And it's something I try to coach my clients on in terms of really evaluating their skin on a regular basis. Because with coaching and with being, you know, a virtual esthetician helping people, often I will give people a guide, but I always try to clarify, you know, everyone's a little bit different. And not only that, our skin changes day to day based on what it's responding to, the environment, the weather, the humidity levels, your activity levels. There's a lot that goes on with skin. So we kind of want to take a little regular inventory, a little daily skin analysis or assessment and evaluate where your skin is at. Notice the texture, notice any oil or dryness or sensitivity, and kind of ask yourself, you know, is my skin in a place to receive these specific ingredients? Do I need to pull back a little bit, or does it feel relatively okay? Do I know it does well with this one particular product? Could I push it a little bit in this area in a way that is safe? So that's something that I just wanted to mention while I'm talking about increasing exfoliation. I got a comment the other day of somebody saying, you know, I heard that you said for acne-prone people, you need to treat your skin every single day. But how do I do that if my skin's not responding well, it's irritated, and it's kind of telling me to pull back? And yeah, I'm glad this person noticed that. And it's just a really good example of how I could say something and it could apply to my clients who are in the position to handle something. But for somebody else, unfortunately, I don't know where, you know, everybody listening to this episode or watching my content is at with their skin. You might not be in a position to handle kind of the end-all approach you need to treat your acne. Acne does need to be interrupted every single day in that follicle to have strong results with clearing, because we can have acne bacteria building up in the follicle overnight. And that is really the challenge, getting you to a point where you can treat your acne as aggressively as we need to, or as I should say intensively, because aggressively sounds scary. And for somebody who's in a place to handle daily exfoliation, it might not feel aggressive. It might feel more appropriate for that person. But again, it's really all in the acclimation, in strengthening the skin. So that's something I work with people one-on-one to really get their skin stronger. And you want to treat it almost like a marathon, not a sprint. We are implementing a slow step-up approach to increasing your actives and always ensuring we're rebuilding the skin just as much as we are taking anything away, exfoliating, or treating. I will put the link to book a consultation with me in the show notes. I get that question a lot too. How do I book with you? TessaSkin.com, but I will link it in the show notes. I'm really somebody who tries to encourage alternatives to tanning. I have had family members with skin cancer. I was somebody who grew up tanning a lot outside with baby oil, going to tanning beds when I was in a sorority. It's something I really regret deeply, not only because I've seen the damage it's done to my skin in the form of really serious rosacea. I've seen it enlarge my pores. I've seen it create a lot of texture and fine lines that, trust me, I'm very on top of it when it comes to Botox, skin treatments, using the right ingredients for my skin. But I have created premature aging that would not have been there had I been smarter about my sun exposure, especially in my youth. We accumulate a lot of the lifelong damage that we see later in our late 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on, before the age of 10. So it's something I take really seriously. Of course, the concept of skin cancer is not as far away as we may think it is, and having parents have, you know, skin cancers removed, I'm so glad it was something they caught early. But it's just something that is really serious. And I think, unfortunately, tanning is a very casual thing. It's so readily accepted. It can feel weirder to be the person not tanning than, you know, going with the flow and tanning. And I see it promoted on social media all the time. And this might sound a little I don't know, like motherly or like annoying. But I just think that's something that should be taken more seriously just because there are so many young viewers online. There's so many people who are impressionable and people who may not be tuned into skin health, dermatology, skincare, who have no idea how much of an effect it can have on the skin. So I would say, this is the season, like every other season. If you love to be glowy and bronzy, invest in some tanning products that you really like, that are easy for you to use, that feel foolproof to apply, that you feel good and confident in. And it's totally okay to embrace your natural skin tone, your paleness. For me, I'm definitely a California girl. I like the bronze. I like the glow. I do feel a little bit more confident with a tan. So I get it from a bottle. And I wanted to share some of my tanning favorites that I've been really liking lately. I am ride or die for the Tan Lux little self-tan spray. They just came out with a pink version that's like a more express treatment, but I like the clear water. I think that's the best one. I think Tan Lux has some of the best tanning products on the market. I really like their stuff. And then I've been loving my friend Jackie's tanning lotion. That's very subtle, but at the same time, it gives some good color and it lasts. So she's a small business. I will link her tanning product, which is more of a lotion, in the show notes in case that is your vibe. One thing I do like about her product is that you can see the formula. It is a bronze formula. So if you kind of struggle with formulas that are clear because you can't see where you're blending, you may like that one. And it's also organic and has vitamin C in it. So it's a really lovely formulation. And then lastly, I'm in love with the Color Science products that are more bronze wash off products and even SPFs, but I just think they're gorgeous. They're foolproof. They look good in photos and they definitely give, I'd say, more of like a little shimmery sun-kissed kind of look. So I love the Color Science Body Bronze SPF. I will link that in the show notes along with the other products. And then for the face, here's my thing. I would suggest leaning more towards wash-off bronzing products. For one, if you are an acne-prone person or if you have any kind of serious skincare goals, whether it's aging, hyperpigmentation, pore size, all the things, you will want to be using active products regularly. And the issue with that is that they exfoliate the skin. So if you are applying a self-tan, it can, you know, kind of exfoliate that and make it look less even over time. So I'd say it's more important to treat the skin with your skincare products, then use self-tanner on the face. If you do like that bronze look, there are some really nice products out there. The ones I love are all from Color Science. They are safe for acne-prone skin, and they are the Color Science Liquid Bronzer. It's very similar to the Drunk Elephant Deep Bronzy Drops, but they actually have all physical SPF. So I prefer those. And they also make a little bronzing stick that is just easy and fun to throw in your bag for a little bit of color. I love doing my forehead with that because it's the highest point of the face where we can get a lot of sun damage, as well as the temples and the cheeks. We can accumulate a lot of pigmentation there as well. That's definitely where I get the most freckly. So I like to do a little bronze and contour and just feel like I have a little added protection. And then lastly, they also have a bronzing primer, which does not get enough hype. It's a really gorgeous finish, adds a little bit of color. You can apply it before the rest of your Color Science makeup. And I'm just obsessed with that. Again, all acne safe products that actually have SPF and skin loving type of ingredients. on this note of sunscreen, one tip I have for somebody who is struggling with breakouts right now is to stop trying a million and one different sunscreens. Sunscreen is amazing. Obviously, I'm the biggest advocate of sun protection, but it's a product you want to be particular with because it's one of the products I see causing the most issues. I've seen sunscreens that are too thick trigger comedonal acne, even more cystic acne. Remember, all acne starts with a clogged pore. So if you're using a sunscreen that has congestive properties, and here's the part I hate, if you are like have the best of intentions to apply your sunscreen every single day, reapply every 2 to 3 hours, that's a product you are applying a lot of. So if it has congestive ingredients and it's going on your skin multiple times a day and you're wearing it all day, especially through activities like sweating or working out, that can really create some congestion. And there are a lot of popular sunscreens that are very cosmetically elegant, that are very beautiful, that we see on TikTok that may congest the skin. So definitely wear your sunscreen. But I would say just be particular with it. One way to ensure you are getting a sunscreen that's not going to cause additional skin problems or clog the pores is by shopping through a licensed skin professional, especially one that specializes in acne. That way you can avoid choosing something that's going to clog the skin, because these professional brands, we are using these products on very acne-prone skin. We are not going to risk our client's progress. We're not going to risk our business by giving somebody a sunscreen that clogs the skin. And these are brands that tend to do a lot of acne testing on the final formula itself. And brands that have been around for decades that pour a lot of money into research and testing on problematic skin types. So this is my recommendation versus just going to Sephora or the drugstore. And one thing that happens constantly throughout the summer, even with my golden clients who I love so much, you get in situations where you run out of sunscreen, you're about to go on a trip, and you can't wait, you know, a couple of days for the product to, for me to ship it to you. So people end up needing to go to, you know, Ulta or the drugstore to pick something up, which I would definitely rather have somebody get a sunscreen, period. But then your options are fewer. You end up needing to spend money on a formula that might be just as expensive as something I would recommend, not as great of quality. And it might be something that I just have less confidence, less trials, less awareness of how it could affect your skin. So if you can, try to prepare for your trips ahead of time. Prepare for your trips by taking an inventory of, you know, the skincare you have, what you're close to running out of. If the bottle feels light, if you feel like you're getting close to the tail end, try not to wait and risk it. I know it can be tempting, especially if we're trying to, you know, make the product last as long as possible and we're trying to budget. I totally get it, but it's just better to have an extra on hand. And, you know, if you don't get to it for a week or 3 weeks, that's okay. It's better to at least have it on deck than to need to scramble at the drugstore and find something that you probably won't like as much as the thing I would recommend for you. When it comes to sunscreen, what should you have for the summer? Okay, of course, you could get away with just having one really awesome sunscreen. Again, if you're budgeting, definitely do that. Just make a one-time investment in a really, really great quality sunscreen. Some of the sunscreens I have that I just use for the face, I use enough. I use the two-finger rule, and they've lasted a long time. So I think you definitely can make a sunscreen last. But if you have the spending money for it, I generally recommend having 4 sunscreens. It might sound like a lot, but let me break this down and remind you that sunscreen is the best investment of all of your skincare. This is the best investment you can make for your skin. It's going to be more affordable than any injectable, than any laser, than any facial or microneedling treatment. We know these treatments are hundreds to thousands of dollars, and what you put on your skin every single day in the form of a $40 or $50 bottle of sunscreen is going to make the biggest difference. So it is a worthy investment. I believe ideally you would have 4 sunscreens, one that is non-tinted for the face. And I think you always want a non-tinted for the face so that, for one, it's safe for your skin type, it's safe for acne, and so that you can apply your sunscreen to your ears, to your neck, to your chest and your décolleté. I see a lot of clients just wanting to get one sunscreen, so they get a tinted sunscreen, and that's fine. But you want to ensure you're still applying it to the neck and chest, which a lot of people don't do because it might get on their clothes. So I would say just having a non-tinted option is just super worthwhile. If you are somebody who likes to work out, sweat, do outdoorsy things, you're also probably going to want a non-tinted or a clear formula that doesn't rub off onto your clothes. So that's the case for a non-tinted. And then I do think everybody generally would benefit from having a tinted option. And again, this might seem a little excessive. For me, my tinted sunscreen is actually, that's the only makeup I wear. So I'm not investing in $75, $100 luxury foundations. I'm investing in a tinted sunscreen that I can wear every single day, that if I wanted to, I could also dress it up for an evening. And that's, you know, the only type of makeup I personally wear. I still think it looks great in photos. I don't have any issues. And remember, the days are longer now. So if you're going out to dinner at, say, 5, 6 o'clock, the sun is still out. So I would still protect your skin by wearing a tinted sunscreen. The third type of sunscreen I believe that is a good idea to have is one for reapplication. Again, if you're budgeting, just use, you know, your liquid formula, be it tinted or non-tinted. A question I got on stories from my little question box. By the way, if you're not following my SD Tessa, please follow along. I love posting question boxes. I ask a lot of questions for the purpose of getting content for the podcast, and you can always submit your question there weekly. But somebody asked, you know, how do I reapply my liquid sunscreen just, you know, when I'm out and about? I would say it's worthwhile to try to get to a restroom, even if it's like a gas station bathroom. Better than nothing, so you can fully wash your hands. You know, if you were in a pinch, you could sanitize your hands and then apply sunscreen, but I don't love the idea of like hand sanitizer on top of buildup and dirt that's been on my hands being rubbed onto my face. So I would prefer to just get to a sink, wash my hands thoroughly, and then reapply my sunscreen. However, I think it's worthwhile to have a sunscreen that is just very easy to reapply, be it a powder, be it a spray, maybe it's a stick. And yes, there is some criticism of powders and sprays. They're not going to give you a 100% even application. Even if you are applying a liquid, there can be some gaps, some errors. So a liquid will always give you the best protection. But I would say generally my clients who are using sticks and powders for reapplication, for one, the sunscreen you've applied in the morning, it's probably not 100% disintegrated, so you still have somewhat of a base, and then reapplying over top is just like, it's a second insurance for your sunscreen, it's definitely going to be better than nothing. And let's say I'm thinking of a situation where like you could not reapply with a liquid. Maybe you're on a road trip. You really don't want to stop at the gas station and all you have is a sunscreen mist. That's for sure going to be better than not reapplying any sunscreen at all. And it's probably going to still give you really good protection. So I think those things are worth it. I think the key is just finding one that's easy for you to use, that you like the way it looks when you reapply it, and it doesn't feel fussy. So for some people, that's a powder. Maybe they love the way it absorbs some oil. For somebody else, maybe it's a mist or a spray, and they might feel like that adds, you know, a little extra moisture to the skin. Whatever it is for you, I would say just having something that you can throw in a bag that's easy to travel with is a really, really smart investment for the summer. And then lastly, a sunscreen for the body. So this could certainly be your face sunscreen. My personal favorite non-tinted sunscreen that I use is for the face and the body. So I generally use the Glymed Moisturizing SPF, and it's their new blue packaging. It's like a navy blue bottle, and I will link it in the show notes. I really love that that one feels nourishing. It has a nice fresh scent to it. I find my skin just really responds well to it. It gives it a little extra nourishment throughout the day, and I find it feels really nice on the body. It almost feels like a body lotion, and something I have been challenging myself to do more because even I forget, but after I've done my skincare routine and after my shower, I will apply my body sunscreen to my body as my body lotion for the day. We do get a lot of sun damage through incidental exposure, which is kind of like, I'd say, accidental sun exposure. It's the exposure you get when you're walking to your car, when you go run errands, those little small tasks that to you, you're like, well, I'm not laying out, I'm not tanning. Do I really need sunscreen? For me, I notice I get a lot of sun damage on my arms, especially my forearms and my hands, as well as my neck, my décolleté. So I'm really trying to make more of an effort to treat those areas, especially as I get into my 30s, because I don't want to have to be investing in hand Botox, hand lasers. You know, maybe I will at some point, but if I can try to protect those areas, I think it is certainly worthwhile. The next tip I have is for anybody who loves to swim. I've definitely had a client recently go through acne boot camp who was a swim instructor, another one who was using a hot tub regularly for their physical therapy. And the thing about chlorinated water is that it is highly alkaline and our skin's natural pH is more acidic. Anytime we are creating an extreme with pH, our skin has the potential to react. I see this in the form of irritation, rashes, facial acne, or back acne. So a simple hack I have for this is to use a little occlusive, such as Glymed Cell Balm. Just apply a thin layer all over the skin. If you notice these reactions on your back, you could apply it there, or you could apply it to your face. Just a thin layer is all you need to create a little shield of protection. And that actually really does work and has benefited my clients who go through acne boot camp. After you take a dip, I would try to ensure you rinse off ASAP and use something that can address acne, such as a benzoyl peroxide wash. I really love Glymed's skin clearing wash because it has benzoyl peroxide and aloe vera. So you're able to target acne and inflammation. Remember, benzoyl peroxide is actually an anti-inflammatory, and you also have the soothing aloe base to calm irritation. If you can avoid dipping your face in a chlorinated pool, that is definitely preferable. But, you know, live your life. If you go on vacation, I feel like you got to get your hair wet. I would still live your life. But, you know, on a normal basis, if it's a regular thing, I would try to keep your head above water. Or if you have the option, choosing a saltwater pool is a lot more beneficial for the skin than chlorine. Next up, we have cold rolling, one of my favorite tools for an acne sufferer or for anybody who deals with chronic inflammation. My rule is try to cold roll at least once per day. It could be any cold roller. It could be a little cheapy from Amazon. I am not picky. They have plastic kinds. I think the stainless steel versions are a little bit more sanitary and a little bit nicer. I personally did invest recently. After years of going through a million cold rollers, you guys, I did invest in the Skinny Confidential cold roller. I do think it's worth it. If you're going to use it every single day, it's a high quality handle and tool. So for me, that's something I really enjoy. I think I've gotten my money's worth because I really use it every single day. You just want to remember to clean it regularly. I recommend using hot water and soap or a little rubbing alcohol, and then you can just dry it off or rinse it off, dry it completely, and store it in a plastic Ziploc. If you can cold roll twice a day, more power to you. Or if you're dealing with severe inflamed breakouts, you can even take ice, put it in a plastic bag, and apply it directly to the skin. This is essentially cryotherapy, you know, the type of cold therapy that you can pay a lot of money for. You can do at home with your own cold roller or with ice for free. And it actually really is very beneficial for acne. So that's something that can be, you know, completely free that you could start doing today to make a difference in breakouts. And my last tip for you is one of my best tips is to be conscious of the hats you choose and invest in one for the summer that you absolutely love that meets the following criteria. So I'm pretty picky with hat wear. I think baseball hats are probably the most common type of hat, you know, people are wearing. They're super cute. They're fashion forward, but they actually provide the least sun protection of pretty much any hat, and they tend to be tight against the skin. This can cause friction and therefore acne mechanica or even just irritated skin and clogged pores. So I just don't love a baseball cap that's really tight against the skin, especially if it's not a very comfortable fabric. What would be more ideal would be a loose wide brim hat. If it's cotton, that's amazing because it's a little bit more breathable. And you want to look for a hat that is washable. This is pretty key because if you're wearing a hat every single day of the summer, again, doing the right thing, but you can't wash it, it can be, you know, something that builds up with a lot of bacteria. There are some really cute straw hats out there, but I just could never bring myself to invest because I wouldn't be able to clean it efficiently. So I'd say, yeah, invest in something washable. Bonus points if it has UV protection, which a lot of hats do. If you go onto Amazon and type in UPF clothing, you can find hats that basically have sunscreen in them, and they are a great physical block. Really good idea to have one in your car that you just throw on for drives when we accumulate a lot of sun damage, or one that you wear on walks. It really doesn't have to be the cutest thing ever, but you'll probably wear it more if it is a hat you know, think is cute. I am really loving the Jenny Kane cotton canvas hat right now. I think that one has a nice brim where you're getting good sun protection from it, but it doesn't look ridiculous. It doesn't look like a beach hat. You could definitely go out and about with it. You could wear it on your hot girl walks. It's super, super cute. So I will also link some hat options that I am loving in the show notes. That is all I got for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you loved this episode. I love all of you who tune into every episode and every week. I am going to be back on a more consistent schedule. I want to try to get this episode out. And then after that, I'm going to plan on having Friday as my upload day. I'm so sorry if it's been confusing that I haven't been consistent, but getting back on a Friday schedule is really the goal. Don't forget to follow along on Instagram and TikTok at MySDTessa. I'm also on YouTube, Tess Zolli. I do more long-form content there, vlogs, tips, routines, things I don't always have time to share on Instagram. So make sure you're following along and feel free to comment any videos you would like to see in the future. Just hearing from you guys as far as what you would like to see gives me the motivation, because that feeling of starting a video and not knowing if anybody is going to watch it is always something that haunts me. So let me know what you guys want to see. Let me know what you want to hear next on the podcast. And I love you. I'll talk to you next week.